And welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth, as always, is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full service and rare coin and precious metals broker, dealer, and depository service. We're always actively involved in the purchase and sale of all forms of rare coins and precious metals. We deal in scrap gold, jewelry, and diamonds. We wholesale diamonds to the public. If you're looking to get a ring and a nice diamond or whatever, no one will beat our prices. I guarantee it. It'll blow your mind. When you go to your... Diamonds are very, very retail. They're extreme, and so is jewelry. And people who've dealt with us that understand jewelry know we're very, very fair. And we educate, and we'll just help you put your money where it belongs. We see a lot of young newlyweds really running, I've been around the jewelry business a lot of years, and there's common tactics used by jewelers, especially, the number one sales point in jewelry is bridal. And there's a lot of techniques where they, I guess, sort of appeal to is a nice word. The manliness of the man. Usually you want to spend 2 to 3 monthly salary, two to three times your monthly salary on a ring or whatever, which, maybe that's true. Maybe it's not. There's no rule, I guess, as a general rule. Maybe they, whatever. The point is sometimes they push people further than they should go. Or they, get them into debt they don't need. But a lot of times you go to these mall stores and they all of them. I won't even, K Jewelers, Zales, Weiss Fields, all of them are the same. It used to be Penny's, Fred Meyer, all of them. They sell really, really terribly low quality product for very high prices. And people will be like, they're selling a carat total weight bracelet for $9.99. Well, the diamonds in it, they are diamonds, but they're grayish, brownish black. You can't see in them. They're what we call I3 or industrial grade. They're the same diamonds that get crushed up and put on drill bit tips. And they're worth, literally $65 a carat. And they'll have that on there, and then they'll put it in a piece of gold or silver, whatever it is, say gold, and they'll have $150 worth of gold and $65 worth of diamonds. Actually, they can get those cheaper in volume. They can get them down to $35 a carat. But anyway, say they're in at a couple $100, and they'll be having a special at $9.99. That is 75% off that you think. And, that's not the way to buy them. The bottom line is, if it comes to diamonds, bigger is better. One carat diamond is worth a ton more now and later than 100 one-hundredth carat diamonds, or what we call one-pointers. So anyway, all that's just a quick little tidbit of information for you. If you're looking for something significant for an anniversary or whatever, call us, give us a little lead time, or come see us. And we'll help you pick stuff out. There's some wonderful products out there. Don't buy into the custom jewelry thing. Honestly, unless you go to hire Harry Winston's or something out of Vegas or New York and pay $85,000, custom jewelry's ugly. I mean, they have so much CAD created. CAD means computer-aided drafting created products that is, well molded, no bubbles in the gold, just on and on. Really good product. We deal with as much as we can companies out of the U.S. Well, we deal exclusively with companies out of the U.S. So you get made in the USA product. And yes, there's a huge difference. The Chinese pump stuff out cheaper, but I'm telling you, folks, you get what you pay for on just about everything. Just because someone can make something cheaper, it doesn't mean you're getting the same product. And you get what you pay for in life. I mean, quality, as a good friend of mine or customer of ours who's a doctor who's spent literally $5,000 to $6,000 a month here over 20 years, not counting when he's come across windfall profits. He always says, "Quality does not cost; it pays." And I love his attitude, because recently we were going through his collection and trying to help him parcel stuff out and organize it, get certain stuff certified and other stuff get acceptable rating or exceptional rating on other coins. Many of his coins, you know, over the years have doubled, tripled, quadrupled, etc., because he buys quality. Quality pays. Diamonds are the same. You don't need to go – when you hear quality diamonds, you hear $20,000. No, nothing like that. Although I do have a diamond, a very special diamond. If anyone wants something one of a kind, finest in the world, it's about a 1.8 carat emerald cut. It's a D flawless, hand cut by a I bought it years back for a special client out of – I bought it from one of the world's most renowned diamond cutters out of Israel. And it's about – it's a spendy stone. It's $40,000. But it is the absolute most phenomenal investment stone you'll ever get. We're on a secure dealer network called Rapnet. Rapaport provides the pricing for diamonds globally, among other things. There's De Beers corners the market on the stones, and Rapaport corners the processing and sales and auctions and pricing. And they're not the Rapaport family is not corrupt like the De Beer family. The De Beer family, anytime a new diamond mine's found, they leverage people out of it. But when we picked out that 1.8 carat emerald cut, out of, I think, about 2 million stones available globally at the time, we bought the absolute best of the best of the best of the best. And there's a difference between diamond, a lot of diamonds you'll see that are called D, just so you know, now here we go. I didn't mean to go down this road, but why not? You'll hear, with diamonds, you hear the term the three C's. That's the old term. They have added the four C's, okay? They go, they have carat, which is the weight, cut, well, we'll leave cut last. Carat, clarity, okay? And then they'll say color and cut. Carat, clarity, color, cut. That's what determines the value of a diamond. Obviously, the carat weight, how heavy, how big is the diamond, that matters. And it is exponential as it goes up. And then when you have clarity, that's how clear the diamond is. Clarity ratings go from, like, the I rating, which means included, should say HI for heavily included. I321. I1's okay on large stones, not acceptable on small stones. The stones I was talking about a minute ago, where they pack them into jewelry at Fred Meyer and everything, those are I2, I3. Those are just absolute, they're trash. They don't, you never, ever want that. Once in a blue moon, we'll get a customer, you know, we'll get a stone that's like 5 carats or something. It'll be like an I2, a little, you know, rough looking. And they just want the biggest bang for the buck, you know. But on small stones, don't even waste your time thinking about it. Then it goes from I ratings up to, then it goes SI, which is slightly included. That SI1 and SI2, that becomes an acceptable range. Then it goes to VS1 and 2. And then VV, VS means very slightly included, then VVS 1 and 2, and which means very, very slightly included. And then you get into, which becomes incredibly phenomenal, where you look at the entire stone and you have to use a loop and you can find one microscopic inclusion. And then you get into internally flawless and then flawless. Internally flawless means that the entire internal portion of the stone's flawless. It may have a small inclusion or a feather or just a remote amount of carbon or something somewhere around the surface. But because they cut the stone out of the original rock to get the maximum amount of it, and they'll push right up to inclusions. When you get the word flawless, that means externally and internally. It is absolutely phenomenal and superbly rare. So that's clarity. So you got Carrot, which, you know, I mean, half carrot, 1 carrot, 2 carat, you know what that means. Clarity. And then you've got color. The color of a stone, the most ideal with basic diamonds, the more white, the better. And don't ask me where they came up with the grading scale, but for some reason, D is where it starts. D is perfectly white. No color at all. Just brilliant, bright white. And then it goes E, F. So D, E, F is colorless. G, H, I, they call near colorless. JKL starts to show a little hint of color, like maybe a little bit of a gold or yellow. Sometimes they'll have topside silver. They'll have a little bit of champagne that shows up in them. You know, so what I go? DEF, GHI, JKL, MNO. Now you're starting to get into the darker stone. Well, darker to us. To you, you might not notice it. But you start to see a little color. Then when you get past there and you start to go further into color, then it goes the other direction. You get into what's called fancy color. That's where people get into the canary yellows and the, you know, extraordinarily rare is like blues, reds. Reds are insane. I had a diamond one time that was about 1.4 carat princess cut, pure white. But on the inside of it, it had a beautiful red diamond inside of it. An employee of mine who's no longer with us sold it as not wrong, really cheap, made a big mistake. Unbelievable. It had a red diamond suspended inside of a pure white diamond, and it was unbelievable. Red diamonds are terribly rare. There are colored diamonds you have to be careful of that are irradiated. They take a diamond, they irradiate it, and it turns a color. They never know what color it's going to turn before they irradiate it. Okay, it's very interesting, and you know you'll see blues and aquamarines and all kinds of colors will come out. Rarely pinks. When you get into natural color stones, one of the rarest colors is pink. The problem is, for a while, a lot of these solicitors were selling people pink diamonds, and just it's such a broad spectrum to know how vivid is the pink, and the you know you get again to the clarity and all these things, and people would be paying 50. We have customers we talk to, they'd get a solicitor and sell them a pink diamond for $50,000. Well, they were propping up the market hard, and they can sell you one that's not at the vivid level as if it is, and the markups are huge. Moral of the story there, you never ever buy a colored stone, extremely rare like that, without certification papers from GIA. That's the Gemological Institution Association, or it is the absolute pinnacle grading service, nothing else when you get into that big buck stuff. The 1.8 carat emerald cut that I was mentioning, D and 100% flawless, probably one of the finest diamonds in the world, is GIA certified. Just thought I'd throw that out there. I could give you more information, but I necessarily don't need to. But you just be aware of that. I do see people that come in and they try to shop price, and they look at carat and price. And then when I educate them briefly on the show, they'll come in and say, I'll mention the inclusions, and they'll say, well, they said it was an SI. Well, SI is a term that a lot of jewelers use, means slightly included. They're not using the GIA grading standards, they're using their own. One jewelry store I was associated with for about a decade or so, they created their own grading system because they didn't want people to necessarily know what they were getting so they could charge more. So the jewelry business is a high margin business. Although you have to realize there's a lot of emotion involved and it's a novelty item. My problem is everything I deal in. I like assets and I like value and I like investment mindedness. And we just had a new guy start here, very experienced in the coin business. And he was looking at some of our investment packages and he's like, this is incredible. He goes, no, there's no coin dealer out there that does what you do for people. We wholesale the best product to people. I said, the sad thing is they don't know. They have no clue. And he's like, yeah, I can see that because this stuff's incredible. So we take very, very, very good care of our customers. Integrity is true, and it's what we do. We just we want you to have the best of the best. We treat every dollar of yours as if it were our own. We take it very serious. People will apologize and say, oh, I know that's not much money to you. And it's like, you know, it's all money to us. We don't think that way. We don't think, oh, you know, we've got a customer at this level and you're only at that level. That's irrelevant. The guy who's spending $1,000 on silver obviously appreciates, you know, what he's got a lot more than the guy that spends $1 million, to be honest with you. Most of the people that spend the big bucks really don't know. It's just a little fraction of their portfolio. I know we all wish we were in that boat, but not all of us get that opportunity in life. So quick little plug there. I have a story. I don't normally share personal experiences on the radio show, but I got to share this one. My life, God gives me incredible experiences, more than anyone I've ever met. Perhaps because I give him the glory, perhaps because he knows I notice. And we had another one this week. Monday, I was at work, and my daughter called me. We live out in Green Acres in the Saltese Lake Valley. At the very southernmost tip of the valley below Mica Peak, we live on in a house we bought from a guy that used to own Hecla Mines and stuff, and it's a big brick house. It's very beautiful, and it's on 60 acres. And we have dogs and everything. My daughter called me, kind of hysterical. They could not find our 3-year-old grandson and 3 puppies. My daughter has 2 Bernedoodle puppies, and I have 2 Bernedoodle. My wife and I do. They're a little bit different in age, but they're puppies. Ours were born October 15th, which is what, November, December, January, February, March. So they're like, ours are 5 months old. Hers are like 3 months old. My grandson had been out. We have within the 60 acres, we have a 2-acre section that's got its own fence, the 60s fence, etc. Long driveway, gates and all that, shops. And we could not, my wife let my grandson out. He's about 3 and 3 months or something. And 4 puppies. About 10 minutes later, one of the puppies came back to the door. And my wife was like, well, that's interesting. So she went and looked for him, couldn't find him or the puppies. And so my wife and daughter spent, apparently before they called me, about an hour looking hard, frantically, all over the land. I mean, really scouring. No luck. She was really losing it. And so I called 911 from the business. I was still here. She'd let him out about 6:10 or something, or 6:15, and figured he was gone around 6:20, 25, whatever. And I called 911 and went through all the hoops there. We needed to get a sheriff's dispatch out because it was getting dark. Very cold. It was probably in the 30s already. It was snowing. It was windy, and it was ice cold out. So I called 911. Was going through the stuff with the lady, and finally, you know, I told her, "Hey, I'll talk to you forever, but please dispatch." And we did that a few times. She finally dispatched, and I continued to talk to her. I didn't know what was going on, and so finally, I finished up some stuff here at work pretty quick, and headed home. And as I headed up into the Saltese Valley, it was dark out. I've never seen so many trucks and cars in my life. There was people everywhere, swarming that valley. There was cops, sheriffs, deputies parked all along the road, all over this place. I saw spotlights everywhere. I didn't know. I was like, is this for Elijah, my grandson? They were scouring that valley. And I drove way too fast, past a lot of police officers that were parked there. Rushed to my house. As I pulled up our driveway, we have a very long driveway. It's a paved driveway, but it's very long. It's nearly a mile long up to our house on the hill below Mica Peak. And as I got to the top, there were so many sheriff's, SUVs and fire trucks and everything. And I'm like, holy smokes, thank God they're here. Well, they hadn't found him yet. They had been scouring and scouring and scouring. And there was no luck. I mean, three puppies and a three-year-old who'd now been missing for hours. It was very, very, very cold out. And they were just gone. And it was getting terrifying. I was starting to think the worst had happened. And I went into the house. I parked. I had to drive up the side of our road, which was an embankment because of all the police officers everywhere. And I ran into the house. You know, every cupboard door in the house is wide open. There's cops all over, scouring the place. Of course, they start asking my wife and daughter questions about people and things like that. And they are just working their tails off. Well, there's one guy. His name's Officer Vaughn, a sheriff, his deputy. Everyone's working the land from our properties at the top of the land. Above us is like there's some private land, and then above that, state park. And we're just right below Mica Peak, very steep land. And this Officer Vaughn had a sixth sense. He kept going south, up the hill, up, you know, and he kept thinking he was up there. He'd gone in once, stopped, come back, gone back in. He just had a gut for it. Long story short, he had worked his way up. He finally went about a mile up treacherous hill, and he found him. And he had been at this point now, like it's probably 4 hours, extremely cold. When they found him, he had no shoes and or coat, which I know from my training as an EMT and whatnot when I was younger and other experiences I had with, you know, health stuff and physical therapy, that one of the first stages of hypothermia is you start to shed clothing because you think your brain, as you begin to freeze, your brain start, you know, the outer portion of your body starts to sacrifice itself to save the inner core. And your brain stops working well and you start to shed clothes. Well, at 3 years old, you wouldn't know that. So they found him a mile up this treacherous, brutal hill. And he was in a little hole, like where a tree had fallen or something. But the cool thing about it was we have these Bernese mountain dog mixed with poodles. And they had surrounded him. That one was laying under him. And the other two were wrapped around him. And they had actually saved his life because they kept him warm. When the officer found him and he was shining lights, the puppies just looked up. You know, they weren't making a sound because our neighbor, you know, and who knows, the puppies live out there. So the neighbor said there's been a cougar running around there. He's been seeing him at nights, and he apparently runs up. We have a road that runs up the side of our land, and he runs up that on an ATV. And so they found him. This is the very short version. And it took quite a while to bring him out because it was quite a ways up. And his father was there and ran up and they brought him out. The puppies would not leave that hole. And then speaking with a canine gal, she said that that breed intrigues her the most because they've apparently the Bernese Mountain Dogs have this search and rescue instinct, and they know to stay where the last point was that the, you know, the rescued individual was, and they wouldn't leave that hole. And my wife had to walk up there with the officer after they got my grandson to the EMTs. Who were just shocked that his body core temp wasn't much lower, that he wasn't hypothermic. When they said they'd found him and I started running up the hill, she's like, don't go, you know? And I'm like, why? She goes, cause it's going to be, you know, it's going to be bad. We just need you to stay down here. He's been out there too long. It's probably not going to be good. It was an absolute miracle that these puppies saved his life. They followed him up there. He'd gotten typically on our land. He typically goes downhill towards our shops and other stuff, and then he knows that uphill is home, and somehow he started going the wrong direction and just kept going and going and going and lost his way, and it was a mile uphill. My wife had to go help him recover the puppies because they wouldn't move without a master's command, and I mean, she'd walked and hiked and hiked and walked and hiked with this guy and stopped and was sucking air big time and said, and the officer said, yeah, this is where I stopped the first time. And it was, she's like, what? And he goes, we're only halfway there. And she's like, what? So she had to hike up way more mountain to get to him. and he had gotten himself way back into some other valley up in there. Just unbelievable. By this time, it's like 10:30 at night. They're bringing him down. Like I said, they're just in shock that his body temperature isn't, you know, that he's potentially dead. And when I asked him later, and by the way, when I heard about this and I prayed at the shop here before I took off, I said, God, I didn't do my normal please, God. I said, Lord, you are not going to do this to my grandson. You're not going to add this story to our life. You will preserve him. You will protect him. And I, you know, and the conversation went a little bit like that. And I was just like, you know, I know you can. I know you will. And it just turned out to be an incredible miracle. But we had, what I really wanted to say was the way those officers showed up and the amount of sacrifice and attitude. I mean, it was one of the most empowering moments of my life, watching, just feeling the strength and power of America. And with all this crap going on, with all this divisive political stuff, folks, I'm telling you, you know, we hear all this trash about law enforcement. And I've had, you know, I think God's maybe touched my heart a little bit. I've had a lot of positive experiences with law enforcement over the last year. Just a lot of really good young, I guess they're getting younger. They're either getting younger or I'm getting older. I'm not sure which one it is, but they've got some really phenomenal, really terrific people there, and women and men. I mean, just very impressive. And, you know, the thing that really impresses me is not, it's just the self-sacrifice, the commitment, the absolute lack. You know, it's the most selfless act when they're doing what they're doing. They're out in the freezing cold. They are giving it 110% in every possible way, working together as a team. Unbelievable. We could have never made it without them. There's no way. They performed a miracle, and that Officer Vaughn's instincts were, you know, he's a tracker. I mean, he's got an instinct that's just second to none. He's brilliant, and I just want to thank them, the Spokane County Sheriff's Department. It was absolutely phenomenal. EMTs, fire department, everything. Trust me, my land was covered with them all, and that valley was covered, and it was such an absolute blessing to just see that force come together and realize that the loss of a child was so much more important than all this crap that we hear. And we hear all this stuff all the time about these officers, and they're out there, folks. I know it. And they are either having a bad day or they just don't belong doing what they're doing. And this is all we hear about. And this is what our media does to us now. They just pump us full of garbage. It's just filth. You know, it's trash. It's propaganda. And this, you know, you think back. It sounds like, let's see if we're doing okay here. I got a message that there may be an audio problem. I hope we're doing okay. But anyway, that, you know, just the fact that they, it's like I was texting a friend, you know, on some article, you know, he was sending me that was basically, you know, they're getting to the point where they're exaggerating numbers now. How about nearly 100,000? Here's an article from, you know, who knows what magazine or what, Newsweek. Nearly 100,000 signed petition calling for end to live coverage of Trump's coronavirus briefings. Then you read below, it's 84,000 people. Why do they want to say nearly 100,000? I mean, why can't they just say 84,000? They got to exaggerate and push. That's propaganda. It's negative. It's tearing us apart. It's just taking all of our authority and leadership. You know what the problem is, folks? We are behaving like Venezuela. We have people protesting. I mean, sidestep back to where I was. Nearly 100,000 signed petition calling for end to live coverage of Trump's coronavirus briefings. Donald J. Trump is the president of the United States of America. He is our father. He was the duly elected president. Sure, the left complains, well, you know, he didn't win the popular vote. You know, folks, if you really study that, that is the dumbest argument. Our electoral college is specifically designed to make vote distribution count. Otherwise, and it was brilliant of our founders. It's been twisted five times and screwed up from our original intent. But the thing is our founders were brilliant. I mean, it was our Constitution was divinely inspired, okay? Because the thing is, if all we needed was metropolitan or we needed just popular vote, well, you just go to, you know, L.A., San Francisco, Dallas, you know, New Orleans, Miami, whatever. You get it. New York, Chicago, big cities, you know. To heck with the rest of America, middle America. The reason Trump won is because the way the delegates, the electoral delegates are separated out. He followed the rules. Hillary didn't lose because she won the popular vote. She lost because she didn't win by the rules. You can't say, you know, it's like losing a game in basketball and saying, you know, if, you know, we got more three-pointers than they did, but if those three-pointers were four-pointers, then we would have won. Well, they're not. And that's not the game. He's a duly elected president. We owe him our honor and respect. You don't like him? Vote him out of office. But until then, he's our president. He's our leader. The lack of respect and vitriol is disgusting to me. You know, you've got Nancy Pelosi, absolutely, you know, the minority or I guess majority leader in the House. Absolutely. She's lost her marbles. I don't care what anyone says. She's lost her cookies. She's babbling trash all the time. She's going to take Trump down and she's going to investigate how he handled coronavirus. They're so mad. They're so livid. They're in the media. Shame on them. Shame, shame, shame on the media. They have done the most hideous, rotten, terrible, horrible job in the history of the world, in the greatest country. Why? Full throttle, uncontrolled propaganda. It's just garbage. And the media is feeding garbage. Everyone says fake news, CNN. You know, and they just, and what do they do? How do they respond? You got two responses in life. You got people that are defensive, that just have an answer for everything, and they're going to come back harder every time. They're never going to change, and they're just going to double down on everything. This is what happens with CNN fake news and MSDNC and these other rackets that are out there. So much of this stuff's being fed by George Soros, Media Matters. Unbelievable. Folks, the amount of money he put into that, $13 billion. He, you know, years back, I know he had over 400 live websites with, quote, activists operating each website in groups, teams. Every morning they pump out the narrative. They set the tone. How do you think it is that all these news stations at the same time get the same narrative and use the same language, the same vernacular, the same adjectives? It's because the agenda is being set by George Soros. The Democratic agenda. The Democratic agenda is socialism. George Soros loves to tear things down. He's a very wealthy man. He's taken down four countries economically and laughs about it. His beginnings were he was a Jewish boy in Germany, and he was a traitor. He switched over to the Nazi side and helped the Nazis capture Jews and recover assets from his own people. He helped them. He was a spy. He was as dirty as he gets. And he laughs about it because he says he saved his own life. And he said that was one of the most fun things he ever did. And then from there, it gets worse. This is what our country is being run on. This is what's affecting the globe. As goes America, so goes the world. People need to, you know, be careful what they wish for. Because if they really want us to tear down the foundational system of our Constitution, and trust me, there's never been more pressure on that Constitution than there is at this time. They want to absolutely devastate it, destroy it, throw it out. They make sure, you know, we've got phase after phase after phase to take this country down. FDR was the big precursor catalyst that went full throttle. He, you know, Rahm Emanuel, Obama's chief of staff, said never let a good crisis go to waste. Saul Alinsky says the same thing. Take crisis and use it against your opponent. Blame everything. Everything is to blame and accuse and to polarize, you know, what is it? You know, they say polarize, personalize, and pulverize. They take people out of organizations and groups and just try to devastate them. Well, we have all seen, we may not like Trump's personality, and he may be not a very articulate man, but he has been a granite statue they can't knock down, and it's driving him nuts. And now he's coming up on the next election. His ratings are higher than they've ever been. You get these left-wingers, and they say that they want to end his coronavirus briefings. Why? Because they say it's false information. No, that's not why. It's because you have all these liberals. I mean, countless accounts before this thing came out stronger that they were saying it's no biggie, go about your day, live your life, don't be worried. Bill de Blasio, mayor of New York, said multiple times this is not even as strong as the flu, etc., which is actually, there's a lot of truth to that too, by the way, in certain ways. But the thing is, they all minimize it and tried to keep things going. And then all of a sudden, when Trump started to act on it, and then we find out that he made some good calls by shutting the borders, which they're completely opposed to, then they start to attack him. Now he didn't do enough fast enough. The thing is people buy all this rubbish. And they don't get the truth. They don't seek the truth. You cannot get the truth without going to a news source that, a conservative news source now, folks, honestly, gives you the truth. I mean, I know people will be like, oh, no, that's bias. Read articles. Read anything. Listen to news anchors speak on any station. Look for opinion. Look for editorials. They had Dick Kovacevic on CNN here recently, and they were trying to trash on Trump. And he was saying, hey, I'm not, this is not the case. This is not the truth. And the news anchor, Don Lemon, just lost it. Shut him down, told him to shut up, said they're not going to sit there and listen to him support the president on their news station. That's the truth. People, that is no way to build a healthy constituency. The enemy of my enemy is my best friend, is an old saying. Only for a very short period of time. Goodness and virtue is how you last. And even our business. It's the tortoise and the hare. You do the right thing every day. You live right. You speak truth and justice when necessary. And in the long haul, you will prevail. A good friend of mine who started an operation years back in Colorado Springs called the Proverbs Businessman. And it started out as a Bible study for Christian businessmen. And they started to apply. They had this whole list of ethics that they'd go by and that they all signed an agreement to. And these businesses began to flourish. Other businesses noticed, and they began to get a lot of other people coming to these meetings. It got to the point in Colorado Springs where they had almost 400 businessmen there. And they were all, as they began to live by these principles, these proverbial principles, their businesses began to flourish. Because honesty, integrity, and professionalism wins. God's laws apply. God says, do not be deceived, I'm not mocked. The Bible says, do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. For he who sows to the flesh will reap corruption. He who sows to the spirit will reap life. And that's the truth. It doesn't say if you believe in him or not. Now, I'm not saying that it's okay not to or anything like that. I've got my own beliefs there, obviously. But truth is truth and right is right. When our founders wrote the Constitution, they wrote a beautiful, beautiful, divinely inspired document. If you study the history of how that came together, it was impossible. And, we all know when Ben Franklin was walking down the steps, the congressional steps, and the lady said, what form of government did you give us, sir? And she said, a republic, ma'am, if you're able to keep it. History teaches us that democracy, true democracy, is a failed form of government that leads to tyrannical dictatorship every single time. You have to remember when people are demanding Bernie Sanders, you know, Ichabod Crane, or, you know, Ebenezer Scrooge is what I call him. You know, he's all bent over and wasted away, and he's lecturing everybody and telling us the way it is and how terrible our system is and how horrible our country is and what a rat hole and da-da-da-da-da, and everybody should get free, 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 free. Well, you, they're entitled and their rights. What is this? And Nancy Pelosi on our stimulus bailout here, which, by the way, is a piece of the end of our economic strength, I'll tell you that, but she's like demanding $10,000 be paid on every student loan debt and all that. And she doesn't mean that. She's saying, "Hey, do you hear me, students? Young, let's be honest, you know, young people don't have life experience. They don't know that these politicians have been lying like this decade after decade after decade. Sadly, they're thinking of themselves, which we all tend to do, and they're like, oh my gosh, that'd be so amazing. I don't care what that guy's other beliefs are. If he'll waive my student loan debt, I'm in. A free house? Oh, give it to me. They don't, you know, unless I'm sure there's kids that have studied economics that get it, but in general, a lot of them don't. They're just transitioning from living under the roof of their parents. They may be in college, but, you know, a lot of them have college paid for by parents and supported by parents, and they're still kids. They're in a controlled environment, even though they can get, you know, colleges almost encourage sin. Trust me, they do. But, you know, still, they're still not free. They still, a lot of them have, you know, parental influence. But once, so they don't understand how things work. Things are worth exactly what you pay for. I said a minute ago, or a little bit ago, quality does not cost, it pays. So if you, so basically, if you get your college degree, by the way, the point is, Bernie's like free college for everybody. I know he's kind of out, but folks, this is a trend. This happened around the turn of the century. This is what led to the Federal Reserve, led to the crash of 29, and led to FDR. People do not understand the economic crises before the Federal Reserve, which came into being to fix all that. They were far more mild. Recessions lasted much shorter periods of time. They were far less extreme. You go back and look at the historical performance of the Dow Jones Industrial Average from the teens, 19-teens, all the way till now. I mean, it's, what is it, every 10 years or so, we have these massive stock market crashes. Every adjustment, correction, I'll say, is at least 50% of the high. Well, we were tapping on the door here recently of almost 30,000 on the Dow. You know, we're down in the 20 range, but I'm telling you, that bad boy is going lower. It is. I was reading today that this corona crisis is costing us globally $1 trillion a day. Globally. $1 trillion a day. I mean, that means nothing to you? Okay. A million a day. After 10 days, it's 10 million. You know, 20 days, 200 million. A month, 300 million. Or 30 million. How do you keep track of these numbers? They're crazy. You got to do them in your head because your calculator won't go that big. Trillion. I'm saying I screwed that all up. How about a million? How about, well, anyway, let's just do that. We'll say 30 days every month. It's 30 million. That's a lot of million. And, you know, and we're getting this whole concept in our head that it's okay to go that way as long as I get some. The stimulus they came up here recently, and of course Nancy Pelosi and them tried to make it a socialist, communist, you know, funding. They're doing a redistribution of wealth. I was speaking with another good family friend of mine, whose family's owned a family-owned business. A lot of families there for, you know, since like 1889. They've been in business, so you're talking 130 years. And we were talking about what good does $1,200 do for a business owner? Nothing. You know, you got overhead, payroll, and all this. They've shut everything down. And there's, you know, how dare you step out and say, hey, this might be a little overkill. They have taken the fear of terrorism, or in the New Testament, even in the Mystery of Babylon, they use the term torment. You look up the word torment, it means fear of terror in Greek. It's terrorism. They've taken the fear of terrorism, you know, oh, you'll get blown up, you'll get shot at a school. They got rid of that, and now they're doing the coronavirus. Oh my gosh. Now all of a sudden that can affect all of us. And they tell us it's spreading like wildfire and they give us all the deaths. You know, if you look at the year-to-date deaths from the year-to-date global deaths from coronavirus are lower than the year-to-date U.S. deaths from influenza. Another lady who specialized in virology was saying, this is no pandemic. A pandemic, she went through a list of them all, and I don't have them, but, you know, cholera and whatever else, you know, Spanish flu and all these. These things, the coronavirus has been floating out there now for about 5 months. And it's got, like, what, 20-some thousand people globally out of 8 billion. I mean, you just don't even comprehend it, folks. Those numbers seem huge, but they're not. I'm sorry. Every life matters. I get all that. Don't think I'm disrespecting that. I'm just crunching numbers. And like some of these other pandemics in 4 or 5 months were what wiping out, you know, or actually in 3 months, 1.5 million people, you know, things like that hit the U.S. And the Spanish flu, what did it take out? I don't have the numbers in front of me, but 600,000 or 700,000 people. That's a pandemic. So we, you know, here just on Drudge, here's an article. It says, you know, scientists offered more evidence Wednesday that the coronavirus is spread by seemingly, got to throw that in there, keep it liberal, healthy people who show no clear symptoms and may never know they've ever had the virus. And the federal government issues new guidance warnings that anyone exposed to the disease can be considered a carrier because they very likely may never manifest any of the symptoms of the coronavirus. Boy, there's a lot going on here. A study by researchers in Singapore became the latest to estimate that somewhere around 10% or more of new infections may be sparked by people who carry the virus but have suffered no flu-like symptoms. And it goes on, you know, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention changed how it defined the risk of infections for Americans. The agency's new guidance targeted people who have no symptoms but may have been exposed to others with known or suspected infections. Let me summarize that for you. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention changed how it defined the risk of infections for Americans. The agency's new guidance targets people who have manifested no symptoms or who have no symptoms and may never manifest symptoms. And then it goes on and says, who may have been exposed to others with, you know, with known or suspected infection. So if someone has no manifestation, so now you have to suspect somebody has it when they have shown no manifestations. And you have to assume anybody who may have been by somebody who may have it but hasn't manifested anything is suspected to have it. You know where this is going, folks? You go back to Bill Gates. I'm kind of short on time here again. What's new? You go back to the whole Wuhan virus thing. So it's got Communist China, South Korea, Italy, Iran facilitated virus spread around the globe. Italy, Iran, South Korea, and China, home to 90% of virus cases, are all partners in the Communist Party's One Belt, One Road scheme. All those videos out of Communist China of people dying on the streets and thrashing bodies on gurneys from the virus were fake and sent out by communist propagandists. What did they really die from? I don't know if you've seen these videos. They're crazy. I mean, they're dragging people kicking and screaming. You got these guys with white suits picking people up on the streets I mean, it's just, it's insane. It's nothing like this virus. This isn't how the virus acts. You know, they're just dead on the street, foam coming out of their mouth. No, they've been poisoned, and it's all propaganda again. Thousands of people from Wuhan, China have protested against the Communist Party's plans to build an organic waste incinerator plant in their city. It says they're silent now. What did they really want the incinerator for? Real videos show Hong Kong freedom fighters being rounded up in handcuffs and sent off to the, quote, hospital, where it's most likely their organs have been harvested and they are cremated. Real videos show elderly people in communist China trapped in buildings. This is all referenced to, by the way, and left to die with no food. Real videos show the communist China installed major new surveillance and cameras and technology to monitor people on the street in their offices since the virus was released. Real videos show the Chinese people yelling, "It's all fake," from high rises as the communists pretend to care for them on the streets below while being filmed. The Chinese are now being forced to use an app which tells them when they can come and go and tracks their every move. I mean, does this sound maybe possible? Every single thing I'm saying is bibliographied. You can look up. Let me see. Well, I'll get there in a minute. So the Chinese, you know, they're so after Trump closed. Well, anyway, it tracks every mood. How did the communists suddenly develop this technology in a month? This was part of the plan and put in place while they were under quarantine. After Trump closed travel from communist China in January, the Chinese blamed the U.S. and threatened to hold back our pharmaceuticals unless we opened travel back up again. They didn't expect him to do that. That thwarted their plans to seed the U.S. with more cases. Then this article, it's the article's TierneyRealNewsNetwork.com, T-I-E-R-N-E-Y. It's just an article. It's a very well-written, well-bibliographied article. And it says the evidence shows the virus is no more dangerous than the common flu for healthy people. It has been engineered to be highly infectious and impact the elderly and sick. Thankfully, it's not widely affecting children and young adults like pandemic flu does. Two Stanford doctors believe that the common flu is 10 times more deadly than the Wuhan virus. And I've got links for all this stuff. And then it says evidence shows the virus was unleashed by Communist Party to scare the Chinese people back into their homes and stop the Hong Kong and Taiwanese pro-freedom protests. Also says the virus was unleashed by the communists to crash the U.S. economy and drive people away from Trump rallies. And then it says the virus was unleashed to help the communists round up their dissidents and assert global control and to cull the elderly and the weak. Of course, we discussed earlier, Bill Gates owned the Wuhan lab. They put out this movie, Pandemic. They predicted this was coming. And it talks about, and then it says also, so it says it's, you know, for their dissidents. And then it also says that evidence is showing that the virus was unleashed to scare the American people into accepting socialized medicine and a total vote by mail. Why would they want to vote by mail? You know why? Because they're afraid of Trump. You can cook the books on that big time. And then it's all respiratory vital outbreaks will peak in March and end in April. The SARS coronavirus panic dropped the market 20% in March of 2003 before Bush and his election, and it came roaring back even higher by July. In other words, they've done this before to a Republican administration before an election. And let's see how much more stuff there's. Now we're getting down there, aren't we? I've got a lot more information here, but it's just be aware. Don't buy the hype so bad. Don't be afraid. You know, there's different stuff out there, different information, but people are, you know, you don't, anytime you're making decisions out of fear of the unknown, trust God, pray for his healing, find scriptures to pray over yourself for comfort and to know that God is the ultimate healer and protector. Think of the Passover. So anyway, here we are out of time again. If you're looking to build a portfolio, give us a call, 509-444-0044, or we'll give us some positive reviews. We'll give you a nice silver dollar. Take care, God bless, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.